back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and this is a special edition, a Super Bowl edition of the podcast. Now, some of you may be wondering if we're going to Monday morning quarterback Super Bowl 54, and the answer is no. I'm actually not a big football fan, but we are going to Monday morning quarterback the commercials. And, you know, just as some of the best players in the NFL were on display in the game, many of the world's biggest brands showed up to advertise, and that would include, you know, Google, Amazon, Facebook, Porsche, Budweiser, the list goes on and on. And we actually have a special guest on the podcast today to help us do this sort of Monday morning quarterbacking of the ads. And that is the Kellogg School of Management professor, Derek Rucker. And Derek, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to talking about ads.
So before we dive in, I just wanted to give a quick kind of bio. So Dr. Rucker holds the Sandy and Morton Goldman Professorship of Entrepreneurial Studies in Marketing at Kellogg. And his work asks and seeks answers to what makes for effective advertising and what motives underlies consumer consumption. Dr. Rucker currently teaches advertising strategy at Kellogg. And in recognition of his commitment to teaching excellence, I heard that you were nominated as a finalist for the LG Leavengood Outstanding Professor of the Year Award? Is that how it's pronounced?
That's correct, yeah.
And you also, I guess, were a recipient of the Top Elective Professor Award. And that makes me think back to my days that I went to Wharton for my MBA. And I think that the elective you teach is a course that I took at Wharton as well and really enjoyed about advertising strategy. So, So the other thing I should definitely mention is that in addition to your work in the classroom, you are the kind of co-instructor for the annual Kellogg Advertising Super Bowl Review. Do you want to just say a couple of words about what on earth that is? Because I think some of our listeners know, but not all of them.
Yeah, no, it's one of my favorite times of the year. So one of the things we love to do at Kellogg is to make sure we have not just a classroom experience, but an experiential learning opportunity whenever we can. And so what the Super Bowl ad review is occurs on Super Bowl Sunday. And basically, when people are watching the game, we and a panel of 65 students watch the ads. And so like it's a very different way to watch the Super Bowl. So this is led with Tim Calkins and myself. We're both professors here at Kellogg. But think about your entire focus being on what is the quality of the strategy behind each of these ads. When the game is on, that's when you're in break mode. As soon as those ads come on, you're thinking about like a brand manager and so on. So it's a very different way to watch the Super Bowl. We do it every Super Bowl Sunday, and it's really a great experience for us.
So you're telling me that people get up and go get drinks or chips or whatever when the game is on and not when the ads are on.
That is the rule. Like you have to go to the bathroom, you need chips, you need non-alcoholic beverages because we only do non-alcoholic beverages. You do that while the game is on. It's like, but Mahomes is going to throw a touchdown. I understand, but this is the time for you to go.
Perfect. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think in some years, that's not much of a tall order, given that sometimes the Super Bowl is a blowout. But this year was actually a very exciting game with the Chiefs prevailing over the 49ers. So let's get into, I had a number of questions for you because I want to know all about like why companies bother, you know, to advertise and how much it costs and you know, are there different goals for different companies? So we're going to get into all of that. Before I do that, I wanted to just mention that the sponsor of the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast is actually Kellogg, which you did not know until we got on the phone today. But it's the Kellogg Evening and Weekend Program. And I wanted to let our listeners know that you can reach your highest career goals while earning an MBA part-time. The Evening and Weekend MBA Program at Kellogg is conveniently located in the downtown Chicago campus and offers flexible study options to fit everyone's lifestyle and match their experiences. By graduation, you share the same toolkit, skills, and network as the school's most prominent alumni. And our listeners can visit kellogg.northwestern.edu/EW to learn more. So Derek, let's get into it. The first question that I had for you is, you know, the Super Bowl represents a unique opportunity for advertisers to reach a massive audience. I mean, I think I've read that it's maybe 100 million viewers in some cases, but it comes with this amazingly steep price point. So do you have a sense as to like, what did the ads actually cost this year? And how does a firm decide whether or not this is worth it?
Yeah, so I mean, the first question is the easier question to answer the two. So what the going rate, the market rate, you will, that's published is $5.6 million for 30 seconds. So, you know, if you're a Budweiser, AB InBev, maybe you're going to buy multiple spots. Maybe they'll cut you a deal. But the notion is that for your average advertiser, just for the airtime, the media buy alone, just for 30 seconds is $5.6 million. Now, it's very easy if you throw in production costs, you throw in social and digital campaigns you might do with Super Bowl, that you're easily looking at a $10 million spend for 30 seconds. So yeah, it's quite the investment financially.
Wow. And yeah, I mean, that's a big budget. So how does a firm justify that spend?
I think what a firm really has to look at, you know, is if you just do some really basic math, is think of like, okay, if you get 100 million viewers, how many of those viewers are relevant to you? And what has to be transformed in those viewers for you to justify the profit? And so, for example, for a car company, it could be like, look, if we get enough people interested and aware of our brand and we start to think about what the trickle-down effects are, that'll make a lot of sense. Or for a CPG firm, it's like, look, given that most of the audience might be able to use the product we're offering, it could make sense. But what a smart brand should do is really crunch the numbers and say, look, if you're going to spend, let's say, $10 million, you've got to think about what kind of sales have to be netted from that to actually recoup your costs. It is a very real problem that you or I might run something if we had the money, and it'd be like, there's not a big enough target audience here that we can actually get our money back. So I think that's a calculation that has to be done, but it's a very challenging one because not everyone knows the conversion rates well.
Right. So that's okay. So that would explain why we see so many ads for, you know, consumer goods or beer or cars or, you know, things that everyone kind of needs. I guess one thing, though, that I was wondering about as I watched, you know, some of the ads was, you know, are some of these firms trying to sell a product, or are they actually just trying to build sort of brand equity, or even just sort of, I don't know, put a message out there that goes beyond just their brand, which, you know, ideally helps build kind of customer loyalty or whatever it may be. But what are the goals? Like, are there, I mean, I recognize there probably are some firms that are just looking to sell something, but are there other goals that sometimes, yeah.
For sure. Well, you could think of it as, you know, one of the things we think about at Kellogg is like, well, are you trying to, for example, raise awareness versus persuade? So you can take, you know, one of the ads this year was Reese's Take Five, really simple brand awareness ad, like make people aware that this option exists, right? So for them, a win might be, hey, 70% of the people now understand Reese's has this Take Five bar. Even if they don't intend to buy, et cetera, we started down the process. Other brands, like let's take the car companies, you see a lot of car ads. The end goal of that ad may not be that you see the ad and go, well, I've seen the ad, I'm going to now buy the car. No, but it's done something, as you said, to build the equity of the brand, which might not only encourage consumers to search, but make it a lot easier for salespeople to close deals, to have content, to motivate Salesforce. And so indeed, the ad can serve different purposes for different brands. And kind of going back to that first question you asked is like, well, how do you know if it's right? One of the reasons the answer is it's complex is it depends on your objective. If you and I have an awareness objective for the Super Bowl, we could easily meet that objective. But on the back of the napkin, the thing we're wondering is like, wait, hold on. The fact that we got awareness, what does that mean for my bottom line? And so there's a lot of assumptions that can be built in some of these models. But yeah, different brands can have different goals. You take avocados from Mexico as just one more example. It's like, what's avocados from Mexico? Why be in there? Because they are a prominent brand where they want retail to know they're there. They want people to be adopting and consuming avocados, right? More avocados. It's not about switching to their brand per se. They are the primary benefit for category consumption. So yeah, different brands can indeed have different goals.
Got it. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the breakdown that you guys organize at Kellogg. And I think, you know, every year you guys do a terrific job of breaking down all the ads and offering kind of reviews of sort of winners and, you know, the last successful ads. So, but one of the things I was wondering about is like, what makes for a good ad? Is it the entertainment value? Is it post Super Bowl sales volume? Could an ad be like a home run at the, you know, on game night that everyone's laughing about, but later proved to not really be successful? Or could an ad be deemed as like poor, but still achieve its goals? So what are some of the things that go into that when you're rating these?
Yeah. So you know, our first approach, or I should say a couple of things about our approach is we're really focusing on what you're doing in your purchase of the Super Bowl spot. So what's going on during the 30 seconds or 60 seconds. So we won't look at sales results or anything of that sort, because those are going to be confounded with all your other media actions, right? So you could have an okay Super Bowl spot, but if you have a great social campaign around it, overall, you might win. We're trying to look at, given what you just did in these 30 or 60 seconds, did you get the most out of your time? So that's kind of the first element. It's like, we're focusing on just this ad. I think there's a broader question around the overall campaign. We don't have the time at the moment to do that. But what's different about us is our students are really encouraged to not make this a popularity contest. So it's not the ad that made you laugh or that you found funny. It's the ad that seems to be strategically sound in a manner that would build business results. So to do that, instead of asking, do you like it or do you not like it, we have a strategic set of criteria we use. We call it collectively ad plan. That's the acronym. There's more about this. If any of the listeners want to learn on our website, if you Google Kellogg Super Bowl ad review, you'll see it come up. But basically, we do look at things like attention. Does it grab your attention? But we also look at what we think of as marketing fundamentals. Is there good brand positioning? Is it attaching itself to the right category? Is it offering a strong benefit? We also look at things like net equity. Does it actually fit the brand's heritage? So are you building up what the brand could be, or are you kind of walking away from what could be a powerful message? So put simply, our students, and I think they do a really good job of it every year, are really trained to think about these ads in a strategic fashion as opposed to simply a gut like-dislike.
Got it. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So let's talk a little bit about a couple of the ads that were winners this year. And I did see on the Kellogg website that you guys gave an A grade to a handful of ads, including a couple of the ones that jumped out at me were Amazon, Google, T-Mobile. But are there any that you want to kind of highlight that you thought were really, just did a great job?
Sure, for sure. Yeah, one thing I'll say is like, this is actually a pretty strong showing from the field this year. Like, this was a pretty good set of ads, I thought. So, you know, advertisers did bring a stronger game than I've seen in the past. So I think of the field of ads. One I'll start with, Amazon was great. Amazon won our review, if you will. They had the highest score. And what was great about the Amazon one is if you watch the ad, it's an ad that not only tells you what it is, and people are familiar with Alexa, but all the things she can do in an entertaining fashion. And so what it does is it takes the creative components, but bridges that with information about the product. The other thing that's amazing, like another thing we care about, is linkage. Like, will you remember what this is for? That ad is really hard to put another brand into because you're saying the product name throughout the entire ad. And so when you look at that from the strategic lens, it's like, this is great. It's not that you simply entertain the consumer. You actually did some thoughtful things with regard to making the connections work. Two others just to highlight, and I want to highlight them because they're both A's, but they're just strikingly different in approach. And what it shows you is that you can have a strategically sound piece of creative that occurs through different ways. And so on the one hand, we have Google. Google had this really emotionally powerful execution, right? Which talked about, you know, a man basically maintaining the memories of his wife. And it's a very serious ad, and it works. It's all about the brand. And it shows you that simplicity in a story and a message can be very effective. I contrast that with T-Mobile. T-Mobile is all about a very simple functional message about 5G everywhere, and it's stupid, simple, funny, right? And so it's like they took this funny path, that worked too. And so the notion is, it's not that should I be funny or serious? It's like those are different ways to engage the consumer. But regardless of which path you take, you've got to have a strong benefit and you've got to make sure your brand is central to the story. And I think that was what's great about both of those ads, that Google and T-Mobile, very distinct in their approaches, but both very powerful and they stand, you know, on their own.
Yeah, and I will say the Google ad definitely brings tears to the eyes kind of thing, really touching. But also I think interesting in that it, you know, we hear a lot of discussion around, oh, it, you know, are these devices listening and learning too much about us? But here they're showing a really practical use case that's helping this guy to remember, you know, key memories about his wife who's passed away. So really interesting juxtaposition there. And then, yeah, T-Mobile was good for several laughs. I wanted to ask you about the Amazon ad because it also had, I guess, what we call star power, right? So Ellen DeGeneres was in that. Does that kind of weigh in these ads, or you don't think it really matters? Or
for sure. I mean, no. Like, celebrities have all kinds of potential benefits, right? So one is they're a magnet often for attention. So it's like, oh, I recognize that person. What do they have to say? And so it's a creative way to grab attention. They can serve as means for persuasion. Like some people say, well, if that person likes it, then I like it too. I think though what's really great about the Amazon one is while the celebrity helps, the celebrity doesn't The celebrity helps. They don't deter or distract from the message. And sometimes you can use celebrities or animals purely out of, creative laziness. It's like, okay, this will grab people's attention. And I think the smarter ones do it in a meaningful way. And so I think the use of Ellen's like, yep, that worked. She didn't get ahead of or in the way of the ad. She made it easier to process. So, you know, put differently, did they need Ellen? No, there's probably other people they could have used. But given they used her in a very efficient way.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. So what about an example of one or two ads that fell flat, in your opinion?
Sure. And these are both, you know, so one thing I'll say about this year is we gave no one an F. We give Fs typically to brands that really destroy themselves in the advertising, where you actually become offended. And that happens from time to time, where you've literally spent money, a lot of it, to actually upset consumers. So we didn't see anything of that nature, but we did give some Ds. And these Ds really came from, if you will, like ads that are probably going to get lost in the ether. They're just not going to have a strong, visible impact. And even if you did something around them socially or digitally, or even a continued television campaign, there's a missed opportunity because people just didn't get the message on the prime game. So two examples of those. One was Squarespace. Squarespace featured Winona Ryder, and she was outside the town Winona, which I guess she was named after. So it's like, I like Winona Ryder. I thought it's like, oh, this is fun watching, but in no way did it make strong connections to the brand, and in no way did it give me a strong benefit for why I should use the brand. And so to us, it's like, those seem like strategically missed opportunities. The other one that scored the lowest actually was the Hard Rock Cafe execution. Hard Rock Hotel Cafe, even I'm having a little trouble with it. But the Hard Rock execution. And if you see it, it's a beautiful ad. I mean, there's a lot going on. It's got celebrity power, going back to your earlier comment, the J-Lo's in there. And others. But the problem is, like, you know, you're watching it, we're paying attention to it, and most of us are missing the idea that it's for the Hard Rock. Not because we didn't pay attention, not because they didn't say it up early on, but the story basically overshadows the brand. And that's one where, you know, looking back on it, it's like, I think they were at least in 60 seconds, maybe longer. It's like, that seems like, you know, that's a missed opportunity by your brand because you spent so much time in this elaborate story and not enough time on the brand. And that's something we worry about as strategists.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I watched that ad and thought, you know, I mean, it felt like almost like a coming attraction for a Bond film or something. So it was gripping, but it wasn't. But we had, yeah, it was like unclear as to like what it was all about. And yeah, with the Squarespace ad, I just was sort of befuddled by, like, was this sort of a Fargo knockoff? Because there was definitely the Minnesotan kind of, or the Midwest like accent. I couldn't quite place what was going on there, but you're absolutely right. It didn't really refer to what they offer. So at least not in a very helpful way.
I always think of good storytelling engages your target, but also keeps the focus on the brand. Like, that's what you want to do. And like T-Mobile is a great example. Like, yeah, it's a story about a guy trying to, you know, I think just have some peace and quiet. And his mom is calling him everywhere saying, hey, I've got coverage here. I've got it here. It's like, the brand is central to that story. You don't retell that story without telling about the brand.
Exactly. Yeah. So I, you know, just one other thing that just popped in my mind is that there were a couple of political ads this year, right? So I think Bloomberg and Trump ran ads. I don't think anyone else did, but those, you know, I think they were on the list that you guys ranked, right? How did they do?
I think Bloomberg maybe got a B, Trump got a C. My view on those is they both kind of get lost in the mix of things. Like, if you weren't looking for them, they come quick. They don't grab too much attention. And so for both of them, I think the question is, okay, well, so what do you do next? I mean, I understand why they both showed up, but I don't think either of them had, you know, the blockbuster power to get through. I mean, this is something that's really a challenge on the Super Bowl in general. Is like, there are so many ads that people are consuming in a short time that if you don't have one of the stronger ones, you can get lost in that mix. And so neither of these were, you know, super negative, but neither were super positive in terms of how our panel saw them and saw the effectiveness.
Yeah, and I do wonder, I mean, it's a big audience, and it's true that everyone or most everyone needs to vote, but it does sort of, you know, it's kind of a social, low-key, like people think of the Super Bowl as, you know, sort of a fun thing. And I did wonder, they both had kind of serious messages. So it's sort of, I wonder how that plays when you've got sort of a Cheetos ad or a Doritos ad running on either side of it. So
again, there'll be some people who didn't like the ad because they don't like the candy. And that's something that's like, yeah, there's nothing you can advertise like to change your views if you're strongly against one of the candidates. But I think separate from that, you know, even though both went serious, I don't think either went so dark as to create problems for the ad, right? Like, you know, you will see ads where literally people go up in arms against the brand who weren't up in arms before. And I think that's the critical thing.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. So this is, and the answer to this one may be no, but I wondered whether you guys ever look at how these ads, you know, kind of fare in the longer term. And I recognize that, as you said earlier, you know, companies are running all kinds of campaigns and the Super Bowl ad may just be one piece of a larger puzzle. But have you ever kind of taken a look back and thought about, you know, whether or not, you know, an ad that, you know, which ads were really truly money well spent and which ones had just turned out to be absolute disasters?
We haven't, not from at least a, you know, trying to quantify it perspective for the very reason that you mentioned, which is like, the problem is, you know, to properly quantify, you'd want a true experiment, and we don't have a true experiment, right? Everything, you know, a great example was it last year, 2 years ago, Burger King ran this ad that featured, who is it? Well, it'll come back to me, but like showed an individual eating in a hamburger. And basically people are like, what the?
Oh, was it Andy Warhol?
Thank you. Yeah, Andy Warhol, just based on the name. Yeah, Andy Warhol. And people are like, what was that? I don't get it. Well, the immediate response was following the Super Bowl is they start doing more advertising around it. And they start putting like banners up. I remember it was in Miami and like, there's a banner for the Burger King ad. And so now if they say, look at all the great things it did, it's like, but it's confounded by the other things you did. So that's why we haven't done it. That said, I do from time to time, look for what I'll call like a, Super Bowl classic ad where it's like you see an ad and you're like, I bet you we'll be talking about that ad for years to come, right? And I think the last year or was 2 years ago, but you had the It's a Tide ad. I think that it was a great example of like, okay, that's a campaign that sticks with you. Volkswagen's Passats with the mini Darth Vader, that's a campaign that sticks with you. So there's a little bit of back looking that way where you'd say, is an ad so powerful that people are talking about it, you know, in years to come. And I don't think any of the ads this year are of that level. And that's okay. Like, I mean, you can have, you know, short-term impact. But I think if these ads are going to have impact, they're probably going to be in the short term and they're going to be what brands do around them.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. So I guess this is a, we may have touched on it, but I'm kind of curious to know, are there firms that take part in this, you know, in the Super Bowl advertising process who don't necessarily view it as a profitable activity, but just feel like, okay, we are, you know, such a big brand, like maybe Budweiser, whoever it might be, that we kind of have to be there. And so we're not necessarily doing the back of the envelope numbers to figure out, oh, it has to make money for us so much as it's sort of, you know, much like a car company might have an expensive flagship vehicle that they don't make much money on, but sort of sets the brand. Does that happen in this space or not so much?
Well, I think you could definitely have, you know, goals that are much as we would talk about upper funnel, which is like raising awareness or creating favorability towards it, where it's not the ad itself has to necessitate sales. But at the end of the day, and I teach advertising, as you mentioned, it's like, look, advertising should be a benefit to my brand. It shouldn't be a cost feature, right? Like it can be like, oh yeah, I'm just going to do it for whatever reason. And so I would always link it back to the business decision. So in some cases, the business objective could literally be short-term sales, right? Like our brand will not survive if we don't get sales, you know, in the next 6 months. Like, okay, so that means the advertising has to do short-term. The other could be like, no, we're trying to build brand equity because we want to make sure that as the leader in the category, no one can come and take that away from us. And so that sounds like it's not, you know, it's like, okay, so we're just going to maintain category leadership. But you could say, what would a loss of leadership mean? And now you can put numbers on that, right? And so I'm reminded, you know, of just brands that have advertised because they're like, we want to defend our territory. And what they're doing, not going to tell us publicly, but they're saying, what would the cost be if a competitor came in and took 10% of the market, right? And now they know, like, that 10%, like, for some brands, that might be $10 million or $20 million. And they go, well, you know what? If we can spend $5 million to protect that $20 million loss, that's worth it. So I guess the answer to your question is, yes, some may be acting with different goals than a immediate ROI. But I would say if you're using advertising broadly, then it should be serving some business objective. And I'd say even, you know, maybe there's the occasional, well, we just want to get behind a cause. And it's like, okay, well, that's fine. But, you know, the advertising serves a different objective there, but it's still a calculated one. You should still ask, is this the best way to use your money? Like, is, you know, so for example, is a Super Bowl spot where I say, hey, we should help out cause A. Does that help the cause more than you just giving $6 million yourself, right? Because if your objective is help the cause, it's like, well, but presumably the reason you're advertising, if it's purely to help the cause, is because spending that money will give them more money than if you just gave it to them. So I think there can be other objectives, but at the end of the day, I think all of these should be treated as business decisions. And even if the goal is not money, we should have a really firm understanding of what success looks like. Because even a cause, is it enough to say, I just want to go out and advertise my cause? Or is it, no, we want to challenge those putting the ad together to create an ad that has a benefit to the consumer.
Right.
Or to the cause, I should say.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So the last question I had, as you probably know, the folks listening to this podcast are kind of young professionals who are thinking about going to business school, and many of them are interested in Kellogg, obviously, being that it's such a great program. And so the question is really just which courses at Kellogg can equip young managers with the skills to measure the success of these kinds of campaigns?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, the answer is, well, we have plenty. So there's, you know, different approaches. So do you think of the classic, like, I teach advertising strategy. So my course focuses a lot on making sure we develop strong creative briefs so that our agency, our partner, our creative partner really does something that's on a strategic lens. We have other courses that really focus on the analytics, start talking about the use of proper experiments and how you would test and measure changes in advertising. So we've got a few different courses that tackle the problem in different ways. And I think for some, like, I, you know, in my course, it's like, mine is for strategists, people who are really saying, like, I want to make sure that when I see an ad or I'm giving direction on what an ad might or how an ad should be approached, I give strategic thought to it. Others could be much more about, like, well, how do we create the proper circumstances for measuring it? So I think we've got courses that not only cater to those different questions, but also in various ways reinforce one another. So yeah, that's something I would say I'm very proud of at Kellogg, is that we take that task very seriously. We love, you know, business education in general. I, of course, have a very soft spot for both marketing and in particular advertising.
Right. And Kellogg obviously is kind of, you know, at the forefront of those fields and is known, I think, in the applicant pool, certainly, as being a real kind of powerhouse in that domain. One last question that relates to this. We hear a lot, you know, a lot of MBA graduates go off and do, you know, strategy consulting with McKinsey or one of the big, you know, Bain or BCG, or they go off to some of the big tech companies. But, you know, I'd actually be curious to know, like, what if someone's really passionate about advertising and, you know, kind of marketing in general, what are some of the other jobs that you see Kellogg grads going off to do that involve these types of decisions and things?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think I've had quite a few former students who have gone to brand management and marketing, and I've had, you know, some of my favorite campaigns, you know, I can't fully remove the bias here, but one of my favorite campaigns of all time was the Old Spice Smell Like a Man-Man campaign. This is, if you haven't seen this, this is, you know, Google Hello Ladies, and that should come up. But it was this campaign.
Oh, I've seen it.
You've seen it, right? And it was that's done by one of our alums, Mauricio O'Connell, who was in my advertising strategy class. And so basically he went in as a strategist. He worked with the agency Wieden Candy, and like that's part of his brainchild. So I think we have, and I have plenty of other examples of, you know, students like that who go on the brand side. I've also had some students who work on the agency side. So they actually care so much about the creative process that they set themselves up to go that direction. So, you know, if you really like the advertising, I think the two angles are you either want to be in brand and you really want to be in the brand manager part and then select assignments related to that advertising, or the agency part.
Got it. Okay.
For many reasons, we see a lot more on the brand side. But yeah, that's the other cool thing about being a professor here at Kellogg is I'm training the future, and then I get to see some of them just do things, you know, that you're kind of a proud papa when you see it, where you're like, wow, that, you know, like I remember that person in my class and now they're out there doing it themselves. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I personally just love for, you know, I love when we can kind of illuminate jobs that are maybe, you know, not what everyone's doing, because I think that sometimes there's a herd mentality that can develop in business school where, oh, everyone's doing consulting or whatever. So it's good to kind of, I think, illuminate some of these other paths that exist and that are really interesting too. So thanks for sharing those anecdotes. And I want to just thank you so much for taking time to be on the Clear Admit podcast. You know, we often talk about admission strategy and things, but I know that our listeners are really, they all watch the Super Bowl and the ads are just such a central piece of it. So it was great to kind of sit down with someone who knows as much about the subject area as you do. And Clearman has always covered the Kellogg awards that you guys give out to the ad. So I thought this was just a great way for us to kind of get your insights or get the insights kind of from the horse's mouth, if you will.
No, it's a pleasure. And, you know, hopefully some of your listeners who are thinking kind of coming to business school will eventually come to Kellogg and they'll participate in that review. So that'd be great.
Yeah, that would be terrific. So thanks so much again, Derek. And stay tuned, listeners, for more episodes of the Clear Admit podcast. We've got some really good content coming your way in the coming episodes. So thanks again, Derek.
My pleasure.